Hello and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. This is episode 273. I'm your host once again, Jonathan Metz, and with me is your host from last week, James Jones.
It was a short-lived coup.
You did a nice job. Greg Leahy is here as well.
Oh, yeah.
Greg, our faithful editor, and returning from the dead, John Lindemann.
Yeah, when I heard that James was actually running the show, I had to come in and stop that revolution.
Yeah, because you've always been a great example of leadership, John.
Hey, you know. As soon as I go away, you see what happens. It winds up with James running the show.
As soon as you go away 3 weeks ago.
So this is our New Year's episode. We're recording it right before New Year's Eve. You will probably get it right after New Year's Day. So it's, you know, around that time. And in keeping with the theme of new things, and also because we have all had us, and some of us more than others, but we've all had some time to play some games over the holiday season, I thought it would be best to do a truncated show where we just focus on new business, because we've got a lot of games to talk about, a lot of things that we can dive into, virtual console stuff, some new 3DS applications and stuff like that. A lot of fun stuff. We got John back. We haven't heard from him in a while, and he's been playing a lot of games. And we will also catch up with a particular listener mail that was referenced last week. So we'll do one email as well later on in the show. But first up, we got Greg.
Right, yeah, well, bad time to get plenty of gaming. You know, but much of it of stuff we've discussed before, like Pushmo, past the Nintendo murals now. Plenty more Mario Kart Online. That's been a good laugh. But in terms of more new things, I did actually finish off the Blood Rain PSN game, but I'm going to discuss that with a future game that I'll be picking up soon, because I got Shinobi, the Kryptonite 3DS game. I haven't received it yet, but as they're both sort of, as they're both sort of similar, I think I might talk about them as a sort of two-pack.
I thought you were going to talk about them from the future.
No, I'm not quite that prescient.
Yeah, I actually just got a really good price on Nano Assault, which is really only a couple of weeks old. Neil just gave it a really high review.
Sales figures!
Yeah, it's probably not doing great, but it's $20 on Amazon, so I said, hell yeah. So I'll have that next week, too. I don't have it yet.
I wish I could buy it for any price right now. Those clever people haven't worked out some region-free hack for the 3DS yet or anything, so I'm sort of stuck for the time being. But yeah, as I said, Blood Rain, I think I'll cover that with Shinobi in an upcoming episode. But I have been playing another WayForward downloadable game, which is Mighty Switch Force for the eShop on the 3DS. So yeah, a bit looking forward to this. We've referenced it plenty of times on the show before. And it's finally here. And, you know, I've played it, I think, for about 5 hours now.
Really?
Yes, in which time I've completed all the levels and got the target times on 13 out of 16. So I'm very nearly done everything, basically. So obviously it's not the longest game. The 16 levels, you know, some of them can be completed, if you do it right, in about 30 seconds. And some of them maybe stretch up to a couple of minutes on the target times. Obviously, first time you've got to figure out what you're doing, because that's principally what it is. It's a sort of puzzle platformer. The switch mechanic, the titular switching mechanic, obviously plays big into those puzzles. Sometimes you are, you know, figuring out how to transport yourself around, how to kill an enemy to open a gate. But principally, you've just got to find these five criminal characters dotted around the level as quickly as you can and then get to the exit. So, yeah, it's a pretty straightforward game, really. Not a lot of fluff or anything like that. But, I mean, these 16 missions, they don't necessarily offer... It doesn't feel as substantial as Mighty Milky Way, which I've discussed before, which it was more expensive as a DSi download. But that certainly seemed to take the mechanics of the core mechanics in that, which was, you know, creating planets and the gravity and all this kind of stuff. Like, those felt like they were kind of a bit more fleshed out. Because here, I mean, these switching mechanics, they get used in quite clever ways, but you certainly feel like there's a lot more that could be done, and that you could have a lot more levels. Certainly, I would have enjoyed more levels, but I still think it was perfectly worth the price.
I think you've gotten more out of the game than most people will, because I have it too, and I'm probably not going to be trying to beat the par times, because I don't really think that sounds very fun.
Well, if I could liken it to anything that I've done before, the thing that came to mind in terms of that kind of enjoyment, where you sort of, okay, you were figuring out generally how to do something just to finish it the first time. So what's different about actually doing it in this time that they've set for you? First of all, obviously, is not making mistakes. So you just have to be very precise. But there is almost like another level of figuring out how to do things when you have to do it in this kind of time. So you have to figure, well, maybe I can almost achieve two things at once. Or, you know, maybe I can cut out this whole sort of step in the process that I was doing before by being more efficient and things like that. And what that reminds me of is actually getting gold or platinum medal times in Blast Corps, which is something I enjoyed a lot about that game. It was just beating the level, but then actually developing a method and then executing that method to achieve that sort of level of a gold or platinum medal was really satisfying. And so because these are very short and it doesn't necessarily, you know, take you a long time to know the level in and out, it's quite doable. And so that's something that I've really taken to, and still hasn't taken me a great deal of time, but I can understand that's not something that will necessarily appeal to everyone that buys the game.
Well, I see where you're coming from, and I like doing the speed runs in Blast Corps as well, but Blast Corps gave you a lot more options. There was a lot more ground to strategize, to try different things. I mean, you could select different vehicles for those levels. The levels are much more wide open, and just different ways to do it. And I feel like in Mighty Switch Force, the mechanics are very simple, very straightforward, and a lot of it's going to come down to just making like pixel perfect motions. And actually one of my big problems with the game is that the collision detection is kind of nasty.
There's been a couple of cases where I've been like, was I in front of that block?
Yeah, it's happened to me a lot.
If you press the button to switch a block and you happen to be sort of in front of that block, then your character is like thrust into the screen, as it were, and you die and you respawn, essentially. Well, you don't die, but
you lose a hit point.
And it'll cost you time, which of course is, you know, all important if you're going for these target times. So yeah, I mean, there's been a couple of times where I've thought, I'm not sure about that one. You know, was I wrong there? But most of the time, having done 13 out of the 16, I don't feel like it's been a big problem.
Well, I'm on the 16th mission right now, and it's the one where the switching happens automatically. It's on a timer, and you're supposed to play with the rhythm. I think it's a neat idea in theory. The way it actually plays out is kind of infuriating, and I really don't like it at all. I've tried that level over and over and over and over again, and more often than not, I play it extremely well, and then I end up getting hung up on this one place because the collision detection and the timing of when that switch happens just aren't exact enough. I can't get a grasp on when I'm supposed to be jumping here so that I'm in the clear spot at the right exact moment. And a lot of times it feels like I did it correctly, and yet the game still says I failed. And that is really off-putting.
Well, it's because you failed, obviously.
Well, I mean, one thing that I could imagine would be frustrating about that, I didn't really have many frustrations when I did that. With that 16th level, I've completed it, but nowhere near the target time. I've not got to grips with that yet. But the what's exceptional about that level, in addition to the fact you no longer control the switching, is the fact that it's much longer.
Yes.
Way longer. So, I mean, if you get near the end of that and you die, and maybe you think it's not your fault, that would be
exactly
quite frustrating.
It's a pretty game.
Oh, it's very pretty. I am thoroughly, thoroughly enamored with the way it looks.
Yeah.
It's so nice.
No, it's a great graphic design. It's a really interesting mechanic. I'm not sure that they do as much with it as, say, Nintendo would if this was a Nintendo game. I feel like a first-party game would have explored the breadth of what is possible with this mechanic a lot more, and this feels very condensed, which I can appreciate on some level. I mean, it doesn't really do a lot of training. It doesn't take a lot of time to get you up to speed on what's happening. There's no story. There's no cutscenes. There's no alternate modes. There's no options. It's basically a start screen and level select. And that's it. And then you're playing the game. And it does feel very stripped down to me. I mean, it's a download game, so maybe you should expect that. But when I'm coming off of Pushmo, this feels less fully featured. It feels less media of a game. And I appreciate it's an action game, and it's, you know, these very meticulous level designs. And there's a lot of fun in it. But for me, I've played the game for about an hour, and I'm pretty much done with it. I mean, I'm either going to finish the last level or I'm going to give up, but either way, I've played the game for about an hour. And, you know, I don't regret having bought it, but I can't go out and just wholeheartedly recommend it either. I think if you're a huge fan of WayForward, if you care about the girly character designs and you really like those close-up artwork, I mean, that's like your reward for beating a level a lot of times, is here's some artwork of the girl characters washing a car. You know, like if you're Zach Miller and that really appeals to you, then
exactly.
Obviously you should get this game. But if you really care about the gameplay, I think there's not a ton of it here. And what is here is occasionally very, very frustrating for me.
Yeah, so I've not had as many problems in that area in terms of it seeming unreliable. But I think it's a fair warning for people that they, you know, if you're not going to get into the precision of that, you know, you just have to get every button press right kind of thing, which you get into when you're doing the target times. You don't have to be that precise just to beat a level, generally.
Some of them you do. The timing on some of the...
Yeah, maybe for certain parts of the level.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you have to be bang on. But then with these target types, you've got to be bang on from start to finish. And the thing is, I could get into that. You know, if you beat Ghosts and Goblins, you can get into this. You know what I mean? So, I mean, it appeals to me in that way. And I mean, I do wish that there was more exploitation of some of these mechanics and stuff, because I think there's more mileage in them. Maybe they'll do a sequel or DLC or God knows what. It's interesting, actually, in terms of size. It is, I think, as a download, it's 10 times the size of Pushmo.
It must be artwork and music.
It's a huge, in terms of blocks, it's vastly bigger. It's over 1,000. Wow. I think, maybe 1,600 maybe. I mean, it's, you know, and I mean, the graphics are so good, as I said. I mean, it really sort of heartens me for what games can look like on 3DS where they are sprite based, but with the stereoscopic 3D for the background layers. If you've seen videos and all that, it looks nice. But it doesn't give you an idea. When it looks so crisp on the 3DS screen with the stereoscopic effect, I absolutely adore the way it looks, and I really want more games of that sort on the system. From WayForward, of course, we know they could do it, but anyone that wants to, you know, if Nintendo wants to make original side-scrolling games that look like that, I would be thrilled, because I think it just looks so beautiful. That's one of the, certainly one of the things about it that I like, but I like the game too quite a lot, but there's a definite limit to what you can get out of it, and that limit is going to vary according to your sort of tolerance for this kind of precision.
Your mileage may vary. So Greg, what else have you been playing?
Well, I did download Mega Man X2 this week, because that came out
Love
for the
game.
Japan Virtual Console. I've not had a lot of time to play for it.
Then why are you on this show right now?
I'll be editing the show and not playing the game as well, if that comforts you.
The show can wait.
I have got far enough not just to admire the wireframe graphics on the title screen, but also...
That's three. Hold on.
A few of the levels as well I've got to see. None of the levels so far seem to be particularly tricky at all, but the bosses can be tricky without much health.
Yes.
And without any of the guns yet. But, you know, it's very, very pretty. First of all, I mean, yes, it looks pretty much the same as the original X, but I think there's just some areas where the detail seems to be taken up a notch.
Yes.
And also, I do notice some things, like when you're fighting the alligator boss.
Wheelgator.
There's this pool of blood where he kind of comes out of and snaps at Mega Man, and that looks sort of very Yoshi's Island FX chippy. They didn't just use this additional chip for the wireframe thing on the start of the game. You know, they did use it for some additional effects as well. So it's cool to see a game like that actually emulated and on the Virtual Console without much fuss. But from what I've seen so far, you know, it's much what you'd expect from a Mega Man X game, and that's exactly what I want. I'm sure once I play through it, I'll be eager for the third.
Yeah. Oh, it's three to me is three or four. I'm not sure which one is the highlight.
Three.
Four is a better game than any of its predecessors, and it adds zero full time, which gives a nice change of pace. It also looks massively better because it's a PlayStation, Sega Saturn game. It looks sharper. It does. Play it on a TV today. It looks much sharper than those Super Nintendo games.
I think X3 is the best, and but X2 is where the series really takes off, because that's where for one thing, you start X2 with a dash, which makes a big difference in the playability.
Yes, and so the level design is therefore calibrated for that. You can already notice that from what I've played, where it's kind of like, okay, it's expecting me to use the dash here.
Right. In fact, there's a jump in the first part of the pre-stage that actually forces you to use it. So if you don't know what the hell the dash is, you're going to run out of lives before you even get out of the pre-stage.
You do get the prologue thing with that giant sort of round robot that looks really cool.
Yeah, that happens in every Mega Man X game. All six of them, there's that big-ass robot just sitting there.
And then at some point you will get the air dash, and the air dash, to me, makes that game sublime. That is the point at which Mega Man X becomes something entirely different than Mega Man.
I mean, dashing in general is really where that series begins to diverge. But yeah, the air dash really makes a difference.
It gives you so much mobility and lets you do, when you combine that with clinging to walls, it lets you get to places that just seem almost impossible. It lets you do the craziest things.
It makes, and I think this is kind of why I like X4 a little bit more than 3, is that the combat gets much more frenetic, especially in the later X games, because the original Mega Man games are really more like puzzle battles. You just jump, shoot, and you have to keep in pattern. Some of those later games, that combat really gets much more real combat oriented. I mean, there's still patterns. You still have to react to them, but you have to get really fast at doing your reactions and dodging and getting behind someone to get them. It's a much more tactile game. Especially if you're playing as Zero, because he can only get right behind them to hit.
Cool. Well, let's hope that one comes outside of Japan. I mean, it's an amazing game. I want people to get it.
I do want to say about 2, though, it has some of the best boss names ever.
See, I got the Japanese names, so they're probably different.
Oh, so the ostrich in Western markets is Overdrive Ostrich.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
But my favorite is still Magna Centipede. Magna Centipede.
Boomer Kawanger.
Yeah, that's tough to beat from the first one.
Okay, well, so John, you've had some time off, and in that time, it looks like you've actually been completing some games.
Yeah, indeed, I have. I've missed 3 shows now, so it's good to be back. In that time, I've kind of gone through a couple of first-person shooters here. First up is actually one that I picked up cheap on Amazon, and I beat it actually before I left for holidays, is Resistance 3, which is one that I talked about a couple of months back when they had the multiplayer beta going on. Played through the single-player campaign, which is good. It starts off really, really cool. You know, they really set the scene well in terms of, you know, like, of course, the apocalypse has happened. Aliens have taken over the Earth. You take on the role of a former Sentinel, Joe Capelli, who is, and now he's just kind of...
He doesn't swear ridiculously, does he?
No, thank God he does not, actually. There's no swearing whatsoever. You know, unlike the PSP game, and would still want Greg to play through that one day.
Anyone have to eat anyone's bullets?
No. Thankfully, it's nothing near that. But yeah, so it starts off with some pretty cool set pieces. One thing in particular is when you're going down a river and you get attacked by this huge robot and it takes out a bridge in front of you, and it's really well done. The problem is that it kind of loses steam by the end because you run into the age-old design issue with, you know, FPSs where the design falls back on the, okay, well, we'll just throw waves and waves of enemies at the player. And once they beat all those enemies, they move on to the next part, at which point we'll just throw more waves and waves and waves of enemies.
Basically, it's all Doom stuff at that point.
Yep, exactly. And one of the reasons why, I mean, one of the best first-person shooters I've played in a long time is Halo Reach, and one of the reasons why I like it and why I can play through it, you know, on Heroic and all that kind of stuff is the fact that they actually do switch it up. You will have those enemy wave-based areas, but then they'll also have it where, you know, you hop in your Warthog and drive around, but not for too long. You don't get sick of it, and you're back, you know, on the ground kind of thing, and then you're up flying a plane. So they really switch it up through the entirety of the game.
Then you're on a boat.
Whereas you know, in R3, T-Pain. It's just, by the end of it, You know, you're just like, okay, can you just please stop with the waves of enemies?
Are the guns crazy alien laser shit?
Yeah, you can shoot through walls. And I mean, that's one of the things I really like about the series in general is the fact that like there's always two ways to kill somebody, even though you're using just one gun. Hmm. There's a pistol where you can shoot somebody and you can just shoot them. But then you can also, the shells embed in your enemy. So when they embed in the enemy, you can blow up the enemy. So stuff like that's really cool. And it kind of makes gameplay, it gives you a little bit more of a choice in how you attack enemies. And it kind of makes some guns that normally, like, you know, typically in any first person shooter, if you're playing with a pistol, you know, you really don't use it that much. It's not really useful because it's just a little pea shooter. But in this case, you know, your pistol is actually useful because it has this secondary grenade type effect. But in terms of the actual gameplay, I mean, it's the one of the problems I have with it is the fact that it's kind of buggy in the sense that, you know, you'll blow up some enemies with a grenade and one enemy will just decide to hang out in midair. And that
just hang out? Just chill?
Yep, just hang out.
Does he have a drink?
Yeah, I mean, you can just walk right up to it and it's just sitting there chilling in the midair.
Sup,
just,
dogs? You know,
yeah, I mean, there's stuff like that throughout the game where it's just a little bit sloppy. That also carries over into the online play as well because, you know, I only played a few games online, but I pretty much logged off as soon as I saw that there was one game in which obviously I got killed because I'm terrible at it, but I also got a couple of kills, but it still had me down for 0-0 at the end of the match.
Wow.
So that's obviously a bug. And the thing is, this game has been out for several months.
Yeah.
So the fact that there's still bugs like that.
That's pretty terrible.
I can't help but feel, yeah, I mean, I can't help but feel that Sony just kind of wanted to just wrap this trilogy up. And just kind of maybe go somewhere else with the series or hand it off to somebody else. Because, I mean, Insomniac isn't going to be doing it anymore, so.
Joel, before you go any further, have you finished Zelda? Have you made progress?
No. I have not finished Zelda.
Get out!
So that makes one hare and three tortoises.
Wow.
And of course, I W the hair for purely ironic.
I liked it. I liked the dichotomy of jokes there. It's you stab him in the front with the joke, and meanwhile your other arm's reaching behind and shanking him in the head. The bald, bald head.
I'm used to it. This is how I'm welcome back. I'm okay with that.
To be fair, I had to make up for this for 2 weeks, so other people got my abuse.
I wouldn't have it any other way, believe me. No, I have not finished it yet. It's been sitting on the shelf.
Of course,
it will come back. Trust me, it will happen. It will not be. It will not be chrono triggered in any way, shape, or form.
Well, because you can't play it going to work.
So rest assured, true believers.
It'll never get finished now.
Oh, it will be finished. See, but that's the whole thing, though. I've been thinking about this because I think about things.
And that's frightening right there.
And the reason why I think I'm a fan of the FPS genre is the fact that I can just blow through the games in a day or two. Mm-hmm. And I can, and to me, I think it lets me sleep better at night because I can play a first-person shooter and beat it and say, I've beaten that game.
Yeah, well, like a few days ago on Steam, they had a special to buy a hard reset for $5. I think it's normally like 15 mm-hmm. or 20. It's an indie-produced first-person shooter with really impressive graphics, like a crazy graphical interface to the menus and everything. And from what I'd heard, the gameplay was really good. And then after I bought it, I heard on the Game Life podcast, they named it as one of their top disappointments because it's only 2 hours long. And when I heard that, I just went, yes! So I'm totally going to be able to play it and beat it. And I only paid $5, so I don't really care that it's only 2 hours long.
2 hours is really short, though.
It is, but it's a downloadable game, and it's really cheap, and it apparently provides a very interesting experience, you know. So if I had paid full price for it, I might have been a little miffed by that, but as it is, I'm looking forward to it. As long as it's a good 2 hours, which I think it is.
Yeah, I mean, as long as there's – I mean, if it's 2 hours of, you know, kind of like a tight story and some, you know, some fun gameplay. I mean, sure, they could probably do some more episodic stuff or something, mm-hmm. but I'd rather have that than a couple of hours of filler.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. And moving on, in the first person shooter train, I also picked up, You know, I was thinking, for a guy who says he's really not a fan of the Halo franchise, I have, like, every single Halo game.
You do have every single Halo game. You own
so the collection. I think I am actually just I'm a closet Halo fan at this point. And
you're not even in the closet. You're just in denial.
Yeah, I'm in denial, exactly. I'm not even in the closet. I'm in denial. So
you're the last to know, John.
But, John, in your defense, you said you didn't like Halo 3.
But he then still went and bought Halo Reach, so...
No, Halo Reach is amazing.
Halo Reach is... I will vouch for that. It is very good.
Well, ODST was the next game after 3, and you've got that as well.
Yeah, ODST is okay.
So I didn't like this game. I'm going to buy the next 2 sequels.
Well, the thing is, I'm always curious with Halo. I'm always curious as to why people just love that series.
Yeah.
Maybe everyone's buying it to find out why people love this series.
I don't know. The thing is, I think it has to do more with the online gameplay than anything to do with the story, because I still, to this day, I think the story is terrible.
Yeah.
And the reason why I like Reach is because it has nothing to do with mainline Halo, the story. Well, it does. It's a prequel, but none of the characters. It doesn't have, you know, Master Chief. It doesn't have the whole hoo-ah kind of crap, all that bro stuff. It's really not like that at all.
It's actually, it's a lot more like Gears of War in terms of the story and the characters and everything.
Yeah, so I picked up Halo Anniversary, and I was kind of curious because, you know, it's been so long since I played through the first one. And I actually wasn't even 100% sure that I had played all the way through the first one, but I have. And this one, it takes the original game, gives it an HD upgrade, apparently adds some story elements, even though, you know, I'm not really a huge fan of the story. So I really couldn't even tell you anything about the story of the first game. So with this one, it's good. I would say it's mainly just for Halo fans. I mean, if you really feel like playing through the first game again with sort of a graphical overhaul, then, you know, go for it. The problem is that it kind of, like we were talking about filler in first-person shooters, and I think Halo sort of suffers from that because it reuses a lot of the same areas, because you'll go through a couple of the areas, like late in the game, you go through a couple of canyons and you kind of take everything out and you kind of move on, and then it's like, oh, well, you'll get to where you wanted to go, and then the next thing you have to do is, oh, you have to shut down these 3 items, and they're in the canyons that you just went through. And the problem with that is not only do you have to go backtrack through all of these areas that you just went through, but a lot of those areas, they're indoor and the rooms look exactly the same. So I found myself getting completely lost because I couldn't tell one room from the next. So every once in a while, like if I got killed, because of the way it saves you, it takes pretty much a snapshot of everything that you're doing when it does a checkpoint. So you might be facing one way, but actually backtracking the other way, but the rooms look exactly the same, so you can't tell which direction you were going in.
Sweet.
So, yeah, I ran into stuff like that where I was just like, oh my God, just please let this end.
Well, keep in mind, Halo, the original Halo came out a year before Metroid Prime. And before Metroid Prime, it was pretty normal for games like this to have very samey-looking rooms and not very good maps.
Yeah.
Maybe it's only shocking because we've moved on so far from that, and now you're going back and playing a remake of this game. And
although, ironically, Metroid Prime is really good about that as a series until the third one, where it actually does reuse quite a number of things, especially in the city and the sky.
Yeah, I'd say that's only there is it really a problem.
Yeah, but, you know, that's weird that it actually, by the third game in the series, although there's a lot of things about the third game in the series that look like they had a chubby for Halo, so yeah. It shouldn't be any surprise.
That's true.
So they became like John.
Everybody does over time. Just give it a chance, James. Just give it a chance. You too can get a chubby.
We've got decades, yeah, haven't we?
Centuries.
Hey, John, since you are the expert on Halo here on the show, I wanted to ask your opinion on something. Do you remember when IGN broke the story that there was a prototype version of Halo being made for DS?
Vaguely.
It happened, and there was some there were some assets. You can dig them up. It was, you know, never got very far. I think it's maybe disputed whether Microsoft actually knew about it or whether they were actually condoning it or not. It might have been something some developer was making and then wanted to show to Microsoft, and Microsoft said, we're not really interested. Regardless, that was at one point in development. I think it is entirely possible that Microsoft could put a Halo game on 3DS because they still don't have their own portable. They're not going to put it on Windows Phone 7 or 8, and there's money to be made. Also, they now have a development studio that was built exclusively to perpetuate the Halo franchise for all eternity without the creative hang-ups of Bungie. So I think it is completely possible that there could be a Halo game on 3DS in the coming years. My question is, would you then buy a 3DS?
I would hope that I would buy a 3DS long before that.
Before this game that's not even in discussions in boardrooms gets made.
Exactly.
I don't really like that franchise, but System Seller.
I think I would have
Mario. Fuck you, Land.
I think I would have a quicker timetable than that in getting a 3DS. But yes, I would. I would be. That's the game that I have to buy a 3DS for.
What is it? Would you be more interested in that or the Conduit 3DS game?
I would have to apply what I call the 8.5 test. Which one of these two games would
Both
I?
Of them. Done.
Probably give an 8.5 or higher to.
Don't you mean improbably give an 8.5 to?
Wouldn't it be amazing if there's a platform in which Halo and the Conduit actually had to compete with each other?
No.
I mean, we could make direct comparisons between them. That would
no,
be,
it wouldn't be amazing at be all. Amazing.
Also, I think it is, if indeed Conduit for 3DS is still in development, which I think is probably an open question considering how poorly Conduit 2 did on Wii, but if it is in development, mm-hmm. I wonder if that could actually be Conduit 3. If the Conduit 3DS game could just be the next Conduit, and that could actually, if they could take all the interest created by the ridiculous ending to Conduit 2 with Abe Lincoln and George Washington showing up in spacesuits, and if they could actually make Conduit 3 on 3DS based on that stuff, and then maybe actually try to ride that Snakes on a Plane fever and actually sell a few copies of it this time.
Look, I would buy a game called Conduit 3D Space Lincoln.
Yeah,
that's
dude.
It.
Agreed.
Space Lincoln. I think I would buy any game called that.
Yeah.
The L just has to be shaped like a top hat. Done.
Yep. All right. So how's about that Halo?
Hey, how about it? So, John, what else you been playing?
Let's see. I've been playing Uncharted 3, which I don't really have a whole lot to say about it. Looks amazing. If you like the other ones, you'll definitely like this one. It has a lot of really cool set pieces in it. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, it's another game where I think you can probably run through it in about 10 hours or so.
Yeah.
So it's reasonable. The one thing I will say, I think the cutscenes actually look a bit improved compared to Uncharted 2.
There's definitely more characters involved in the scenes. There's much more of a group, yeah. like a team dynamic in the third game.
Yeah, I mean, the gameplay is still, you know, waves of enemies. I had to laugh right at the start because you're fighting a whole bunch of enemies, and it's just a whole bunch of guys wearing suits. I'm like, everybody? So I'm fighting like 100 guys, and they're all wearing the same black suit with a red tie. I'm like, all right, okay, whatever. You know, but that hasn't really changed throughout the series. So if you didn't like that, then you still won't like that in Uncharted 3. But, you know, the game is gorgeous. Cutscenes are amazing. It's just really, really well done. The one thing I will say is one of my first impressions was that the cutscenes, I think they're sort of getting on the brink of going overboard with them a little bit, like, because it's to the point where the cutscenes kind of interrupt gameplay a little bit too much for me, where, you know, you'll enter a room and immediately it'll switch to a cutscene, and they're pretty seamlessly done, and we'll see how this holds up throughout the game, but I would have liked for it to have a little bit more uninterrupted gameplay followed by a cutscene rather than, you know, a little bit of gameplay, cutscene, a little bit of gameplay, cutscene. And some of the cutscenes are pretty long, so I think kind of they might be trying a little bit too hard to make it into an action movie. Hmm. You know, a little bit too much. They might have kind of went a bit too far in that direction. But
too cinematic.
Yeah, just a little bit. But it's cool. You get to see kind of like Drake's backstory, and the story deals with like the Crusades and all that kind of stuff. It's really neat. Really, really well done. So, I mean, if you liked Uncharted 1, Uncharted 2, and you're going to love Uncharted 3.
Okay, cool. So before we get to James and my new business, we're going to take a quick break. So we'll have Now Playing, and we'll come back with more new business. Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com.
We begin this week with a pair of 3DS reviews from who else but Neil Ronahan, beginning with the eShop version of VVVVVV, which he answers the question, is this excellent platformer very good on the 3DS?
Shoot me.
Yes.
Right now, in the head.
And Neil also looks at the retail game, Nano Assault, showing his 3DS debut as quite possibly the best-looking 3DS game not made by Nintendo.
Yeah, and Neil boasted on Twitter this week that he is now getting dangerously close to beating my record for having the most reviews on the website.
All right, and also on the review front, Andy Gergen gives us a review of WWE All-Stars, and he says it's considerably more fun than an elbow to the face. That's for 3DS, by the way.
But is it more fun than steroids to the ass?
I have no comment on that.
That's what happened to his hair.
Zach gives us a review of Mighty Switch Force for 3DS, and he says, this puzzle platformer is mighty fine.
What is up with these Gene Shalit review abstracts?
How many bullets are in that gun? I need them all. All right, so we have a feature. It's not a review, so there's not going to be any puns involved here. And this feature is actually the NWR staff favorite 10 games of 2011. We started this process. It's going to run through, when you hear this, probably through the end of that week. As opposed to the standard process of debating each other for 4 months before you pick a game of the year in April. We went ahead and just picked the 10 best across all Nintendo platforms. We have another feature. This another staff says, number 6! And this is Nintendo's New Year's resolutions. These are resolutions that we wrote on Nintendo's behalf that they'll probably ignore.
Finally, we've got a bunch of news related to Nintendo Direct. This is the Japan press conference that Nintendo did, and they broadcast it live in Japanese, of course, right after Christmas. And so you can check out our news section at NintendoWorldReport.com for all the stories coming out of that event and hear about some of the upcoming 3DS and Wii features and games. So be sure to check that out, along with all these reviews and features, over at NintendoWorldReport.com. And we are back for more new business, and James is up next.
So, I've got a kind of a game I'll say is surprising, because there's very little chance anyone will guess it, but I'll give you a chance. It's an early Wii game published by Nintendo with online capabilities.
Pokemon Battle Revolution.
No.
It's a good guess. I've got nothing.
Oh, okay. So, this is, and I'm going to use the correct name for this one. This is Animal Crossing Let's Go to the City.
Well, that's not that
it's
early.
Not that
it's
early.
2008.
It's a while ago.
Well, yeah.
The early online game. Because there were probably a handful of online games.
Okay, so I named the very first online Wii game, and James named the 20th online Wii game.
That is the very first, yes, you're correct.
And it was a whole year before Animal Crossing.
Fine, whatever.
So City Folk, okay.
Yeah, but not City Folk, because I actually have the European version.
Why?
Basically, it was cheaper to buy this with a Wii Speak than buy a Wii Speak, so I was given the excess copy of Animal Crossing.
Okay.
So I've only been playing it for a handful of days now. Obviously, I played the GameCube Animal Crossing. I played the DS Animal Crossing. And then I kind of just skipped this one because I'm like, well, just more Animal Crossing, whatever. And what I found is that, yeah, this is just more Animal Crossing. But I do kind of have some commentary based on conversations that I've had discussing it since I've played it that I thought might be more interesting to discuss here in this forum with more people.
Were these conversations that you had over Wii Speak while playing the game?
No.
Oh.
Not yet.
No, because that's impossible.
We'll see.
James, we should boot up the Wii Speak channel and play around on it this
weekend.
Yes,
definitely. We need the four fat heads looking at each other.
Yeah.
I can't get enough of that. Sometimes I do it by myself.
Instead of talking about the game, because, I mean, with the exception of the addition of the city, which is really just a few more shops and a little bit of people you can meet, it's pretty similar to the DS game. And in fact, you can transfer over elements of your DS game to the Wii game.
Did you do that?
No, I just went ahead and built a new one.
Hmm.
So what I did is I went ahead and I started a new character. I went through all the Animal Crossing bullshit of trying to get enough money to pay off your loan. I wanted to get a bigger loan. But what it brought to, though, was what should a future Animal Crossing game be?
Hmm.
And if you all would indulge me, I think that might be kind of an interesting discussion just to have here, because it's still kind of an important brand for Nintendo, even though they haven't put one out in a while. I mean, the 3DS game's coming.
Yeah, it's coming pretty soon, I think.
But we don't really know much about it.
No,
I mean,
we don't.
Well, I can't. I mean, I would have thought that would have come up in the Nintendo Direct press conference broadcast in Japan if it was going to be that imminent. So,
right. I mean, it's this year. We know that much.
Yeah, it'll be this year, whether they'll wait till towards the end or who knows. But obviously, the DS game was massive in Japan.
Huge.
Absolutely massive. One of the biggest sellers out of everything. Even Nintendogs, New Super Mario Brothers, it's right up there with the elite there. So I assume they'll certainly, you know, make a big deal out of it there. Whether they'll come out at the same time or get as much of a push outside. It still does well outside, as I understand it, but not comparably well.
No, it doesn't go insane. So, I mean, the 3DS one obviously needs to have Street Pass. I mean, no question.
Sure, and Spot Pass too. I mean, they even did some, Wi-Fi...
WeConnect 24.
Thank you. It's been used so little, I forgot the name of it.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah, but I still see the occasional email about, oh, there's a new bit of gold furniture that they're giving you, like for the Wii game. You know, so
yeah, the website where they list the gold items and stuff is still running. They're still adding stuff to that website years later.
So yeah, Spot Pass, Street Pass, that's all a given.
But I was thinking about it and. This isn't viable on the 3DS because we already know this isn't the format it's going to take. But I was wondering, Animal Crossing itself is a game that really you don't need to play extended periods of time, but you do kind of need to check in on it all the time. Like, even if you're just going to check in for 20 minutes, I was wondering if the next Animal Crossing should be closer to a channel than a game. Maybe not the 3DS one, but the Wii U one. If it could be something they could just sell you what essentially is... lives on your Wii U and you don't have to put a disc in every time you want to visit your town.
Well, you don't really even need the disc on the GameCube version. I mean, the entire game fits in the system memory for GameCube, so...
Because it's so small.
It seems like like it might be in the realm of possibility, actually.
Because I was thinking about it, so I've been trying to finish off some other stuff that I've been doing on the Wii. You know, I had some games that I've already beaten, but I kind of want to get some more content out of.
Get those achievements.
Yeah, that's it. But what I found is that this game is pretty simple. I should be able to just play it on the fly when I want to, but instead I have to pull the discs, swap discs, make sure I put the other disc away or I'll do something horrible to it, and then swap them back after playing for all of 10-15 minutes. That's a big... That really dissuades me from wanting to play Animal Crossing.
And of course, with the portable format, it's even more of an issue in terms of, you know, if you want to change games.
You have to carry your damn card around.
It would make perfect sense as a downloadable game in general. You know, you could execute it that way. The problem is that, you know, in Japan, they just wouldn't sell nearly as many copies.
Yeah.
So it won't happen. So then you get into the talk of, well, could we have kind of like a workaround, like a channel where maybe you could do some things, but not everything?
What if they just let you install the game to your 3DS from the game card? Wouldn't that be crazy?
It's madness, Johnny.
Although, I should mention some related some of the news that's come out recently, more around the Nintendo Direct thing rather than from it, was the whole thing that the Fire Emblem 3DS game will have paid DLC.
Yes, it will.
Wow. Which is not something that Nintendo does a lot, as we know, and Animal Crossing has long been touted as the sort of thing that could have paid DLC.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So you wonder, being that it is more mainstream, especially in Japan, as I said, whether they would actually cross the Rubicon.
Animal Crossing Cash Shop?
Like, buy bells for cash?
It's interesting, isn't it? Because, you know...
Works for Zynga.
Yeah, I mean, some people might have thought that something like Animal Crossing would have been easier to just pump out as a key title in the lineup, given that the iterations to date have been very close together, even though something like Mario Kart, which is already out. Of course, it hasn't happened yet, and it doesn't look like it's going to happen for a fair few months yet, so maybe there is something more radical going on than you perhaps would think. Probably not actually radical, but, you know, we're all relative here. But, you know, certainly there's some little changes they've talked about already, like you are the mayor instead of just a regular bloke in the town, all this sort of stuff. So I don't know how meaningful that's going to be when it comes to the actual game. And it certainly looks nice.
Oh, yeah, it looks very nice. I was actually impressed.
It's the nicest looking one yet by far, I thought, that when I saw the trailer for it. But whether they would keep, obviously, for that mainstream accessibility of being a box game, but actually go more into the digital space with DLC and all this kind of stuff, I think it's possible.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. They didn't talk about it at Nintendo Direct. It didn't hit me that they didn't. But at the time, I was thinking more of the Wii U space, because I just assumed the 3DS game was a foregone conclusion. It was going to be an incredibly iterative release based primarily on Animal Crossing City Folk, Let's Go to the City, whatever the hell they called it.
But they kind of already done that with City Folk, and it didn't work very well for them, right? I mean, one of the nice things about the DS version, I think maybe one of the reasons it was portable, which was a big deal, but it was also a real sequel to the first Animal Crossing, which had been around since N64. in Japan.
Right.
So it was a major upgrade, you know, by 2005 or whenever it came out. But City Folk is, for many intents and purposes, is essentially a port of the DS game with a little bit of extra content. And it's much less convenient to play because now it's on a console. So it makes sense to me that the portable games would be the flagship. The 3DS one interests me because I've never played Animal Crossing, not for more than like 2 minutes. And it's not super appealing to me, but I think you start to add in some of this Street Pass stuff, PlayCoin stuff, the idea of it being really well suited to portable pickup, you know, open it for a few minutes, kind of work on it. And plus, finally, they're going to be adding content to it again, adding new features and really expanding the concept of what the game is and the kind of stuff that you do in it. Maybe this will be the entry point for me to actually try it out.
Yeah, I mean, it could be cool if they have something ongoing in it that you actually care about.
Yeah, like public quests.
Yeah.
John wants there to be mob spawns.
DPS fishing.
I want raids in Animal Crossing. But, you know, and that's been, you know, what's always made me put it down is just the fact that after a while, you can only chop so many trees. And
well, yeah, you run out of trees.
It just becomes complete busy work as opposed to a game.
Yeah, I mean, for the GameCube game, it was my first experience with the franchise, obviously. And I would come home from school, play for half an hour. It happened to be when I came home from school was optimal fishing time. And I would clean up, catching all the best fish, sell them off. And then I'd have to pull out another game, throw it into the GameCube, and then play what I actually really felt like playing. And I mean, I enjoyed
the your chores first, be a good boy.
Yeah, basically. And I mean, I enjoyed the 20 minutes I was playing, and they were, I would have probably kept doing it for longer if it wasn't a point of, well, I have to take the game I was playing out, swap memory cards, put the other game in. Because remember, Animal Crossing had its own damn memory card because its memory card was so gigantic.
The save file was big, yeah.
My tolerance for that doesn't exist anymore in an environment where we can install things. But at the same time, I don't know what they're adding to Animal Crossing 3DS.
Well, I think they're due to do some major things to it. And somebody told me this, maybe it was one of you guys earlier this week, but Swapnote is the perfect complement to Animal Crossing. I mean, this has to be in the new Animal Crossing. Because if you think back, all the way back to when Animal Crossing was first shown to U.S. media at E3 back in 2002 or 3, and anyway, Miyamoto did this demo for selected media, and he was talking about how the theme of the game was communication, which I thought was bizarre since it was not online. So you're either communicating with other people who also have their own save card.
who live in your house.
Who live in your house, yeah. And have their own memory cards and are swapping them out day to day and are fighting for you with game time. And a lot of people have stories of that actually happening. Never happened to me. But it's either that or you're communicating with the AI. You're writing letters to characters in the game who don't actually understand what you're writing, which is stupid, right? But now we've got Swapnote. You can handwrite letters to people, send them over the internet. To me, that is beautiful. That is a beautiful solution that really gets to the heart of what Animal Crossing is supposed to be about.
Right, and it's almost why I was willing to write the 3DS one off, because I was thinking more like, how do you use the Wii U tablet independent of the game screen to facilitate communication? I mean, beyond just saying, let's just drop it on the console, that way it doesn't have to have a disc in there. But like, if I just have my tablet sitting on the table and the Wii U is in, I don't know, some sort of suspended mode, could I get notifications that somebody did something? And it pop up on my tablet.
I think
I
so.
Just go, hey.
Yeah, they were talking about that with the Ghost Recon game.
Yeah,
that you could do that. Like it could alert you when your friends are online and they want to play, even though the system is sort of asleep.
Right.
And the other thing is, I mean, if on Wii U Animal Crossing existed as some kind of channel, then what if you could do other things on the Wii U playing on the screen? Like if you could play a Wii game, or you could maybe do other things with Wii U that don't require the tablet, and have someone actually use the Animal Crossing channel on the tablet and essentially run two programs at the same time. If the channel is small and fits in memory, and actually, you know, there's enough left over to do something else on the TV, that would be really cool. If you could play two games at the same time on the same console. Because Animal Crossing is the kind of application where you might actually want to do that. You know, you might have one person's playing Mario on the TV, but the other person wants to check on their Animal Crossing village and chop some fruit or something.
Well, it'd be really cool if you could play one game and have the two games interact. So in other words, you could send somebody a note.
So you could sell fruit to Mario as he's running out of health.
Well, that's right. I mean, you could troll somebody in one game through Animal Crossing.
That's messed up.
But even do cool stuff like you could complete some task in one game and you would have some new item show up in Animal Crossing. Stuff like that would be really cool that people could see as they're playing Animal Crossing.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thought experiment to have now, because what concepts could they put into these games that really make them stand out as distinct entries in the series? I mean, in my mind, it almost has to be, if you have the 3DS game, the Wii U people can visit your village, even if it's not two-way. Like, I would like to be able to say that one of my friends owns it on 3DS. I want to visit his village from the Wii U version.
That seems doable.
Well, I've talked about it sort of with Smash Brothers, having some sort of, you know, the new Smash Brothers, there would be some sort of interaction between the 3DS and the Wii U.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of ways they can make this work. I mean, because what I find is that, it might sound like I'm not enjoying it, but I'm actually really still kind of enjoying playing the Wii game. I mean, it's been long enough, I haven't played an Animal Crossing game in a while. And it's just sort of been this nice, relaxing way to relax during my vacation. You know, I put it in, I play for an hour or so, make some money, talk to some of the completely insane and ridiculous characters, which I think is an underrated element of this game, that the characters in this game are actually really funny. There's just things in this game that work so well that it just feels like they just need to do something to make it more something I can do quickly, as opposed to a decision to go actively play a game. And they need to add something to make me stay longer than I currently do. Because the core format, as I found just recently, is still a really solid experience that I enjoy doing. I don't know. And the other game I have real briefly is I finally went ahead and got Deus Ex.
Human Revolution.
Human Revolution. And then found that it seems like the new Xbox OS is having some issues with it, so it won't boot up past new game.
Really?
New game freezes, so we'll see how that goes. But seven times in a row, it's new. I hit new game and it freezes.
Yikes!
Wow.
I'd like to play that game at some point, but that's kind of scary. Maybe I should get the PC version.
Yeah, I'll look into what's going on with that. I just tried it today, and I was like, well, this isn't good. I might try installing it to the hard drive and see what happens. I don't have enough space to install it right now, so I might have to do some fridge cleaning.
Yeah.
Which is not a promising prospect. That'll do it for me.
Okay, cool. So I will wrap up new business, and I've got a whole bunch of stuff here. So you guys, you're going to have to help me out and make comments and ask questions, or else this will be 30 minutes of me rambling because I got so many games to talk about here.
Oh, I'll help you out.
Thanks.
By getting it down to 15 minutes.
Thank you. So first up, very quickly, I did download VVVVVV. It came out today as of this recording. And this is the second time I've bought it. I had it on PC. It was one of my favorite games of 2010. The 3DS version seems very faithful. It seems like a very good port. I'd say the 3D effect is minimal, really minimal. It's such a simple game. It basically looks like an Atari game. So the backgrounds are mostly just black. There are some areas of the game that do have backgrounds, and those have a little bit of parallax in the 3D effect, but it's very modest. I think having the two screens so that you have the map on the bottom makes a big difference. Because this is not a game where you want to be pausing a lot to check the map, because that can actually be more disorienting than if you're just able to look at it all the time. It's a very fast-moving game, so you'd like to be able to kind of glance down and get an idea of where you are. And you do a lot of teleporting. You find the map is contiguous like in a Metroid game, although the gameplay itself is nothing like Metroid. It's a platformer. But it is this kind of open world exploration type thing where you can kind of just go anywhere you want to. There's not really any kind of gating. So it's really up to you to kind of just try to explore every nook and cranny in the map and be thorough. And the map wraps around. So you go too far on the right and you come out on the left side. So having the map there, I think, really helps you make sense of this world. Whereas it felt a little abstract in the PC version. It was a little hard to wrap your head around. You know, just where are these things in relation to each other? So I think that's nice. And supposedly there's some unique content, some new areas. I have not gotten to those yet. So I would imagine you probably have to beat the main game in order to unlock those. So I haven't done that yet. But overall, I think, you know, this is $8 on 3DS. I think that's really pushing it. Not because the game isn't worth it. I think there's a lot of content here. It's just when you look at the cost of it on other platforms, I'm not sure they've added enough here to make it worth almost twice the price. I'm really not sure that that is justifiable. And I think that's, you know, maybe an issue with Nintendo's download economy. It's just they probably are still choosing the prices for these things, and they said, oh, this is a great game, and there's a lot of stuff to do in it. Let's make it $8. Let's make it a semi-premium eShop game. And I think that's fine. It's justifiable if this was in a vacuum and you couldn't already get VVVVVVV on PC or Mac for about $3. Sometimes even less. So there's been so many sales lately on Steam where you could get it for like $1. And maybe it's not fair to compare it to that. That's obviously like crazy clearance pricing. But, I think you really can't ignore the fact that this game exists in a very comparable version on other platforms where you can get it for much less. And by the way, this is a platform that virtually everyone has. And I think virtually everyone's platform can run this game.
And that's the thing, though. Sales happen enough.
They do. They happen often.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be cheaper.
Now, the question I have is control comfort. Is it better to play it on the handheld controls?
Not really, no. I mean, it's a game that uses three buttons. It's left, right, and flip. There's no jump, there's no shooting, there's no action. So I think playing it on a keyboard is just as good as playing it on 3DS, maybe even a little bit better, because the 3DS D-pad is kind of shitty. And you can play it with a circle pad, but I don't think it feels as tight because the movement is very digital, and also you have to be extremely exact with how far you push it. So you really want to play it with the D-pad, but the D-pad isn't very good on 3DS. So I felt like it controlled a little better on the keyboard. I think I'll be able to play it and beat it, but I'm not sure I'm going to be able to get all the secret medals and do all the crazy optional stuff that I could on the PC version. So I think it's a good version. And it's an amazing game. If you haven't already played it, God, get it on 3DS. It's totally worth $8. But if you don't really care about having it portable, I think you should probably just buy it on your computer because it's a lot cheaper and it's just as good that way, and it maybe even controls a little better. So that's kind of the downside, I guess. But regardless, everyone should play this game. It is fantastic. It has one of the best soundtracks you've ever heard in a video game. One thing I really want to talk about, because I've spent a lot of time with this over the past week, is Swapnote. I did not know this was coming, didn't know anything about it. I was reading on Twitter that people were going crazy about Swapnote on 3DS, and I was like, oh crap, it's Thursday. I was at home, I'm not in my usual element, I wasn't really paying attention, I was out of my routine of always checking on Thursday morning for all the new eShop stuff. So I hadn't bothered to check it. And sure enough, they had released this Swapnote thing. It's free. It's made by Nintendo. And I hope everyone listening has it now because it's incredible. I mean, obviously it's free. You should download it, but you should actually use it. It's really fantastic. So the idea is that it's like PictoChat crossed with Twitter. I mean, you draw messages for your friends. You write them or draw them. You can doodle. You can, use your own handwriting and everything. And you make a note, and then you send it over the internet, over SpotPass, to any friend that you have on your 3DS friend list. Or there's a button, amazingly, there's a very convenient button to just send it to everybody on your friends list. And it will just broadcast it like that. And the amazing thing is, when they open it up, or when they send you a message and you open it up, not only do you see what they created, but it's animated, and you actually see a recreation of them writing this out or drawing whatever it is. And it's mesmerizing. Like, you can't take your eyes off of it. It's kind of like, you remember the old TV show Ghost Rider?
Yeah, oh yeah.
It's
yeah.
A bit like that. It's like watching a ghost write a message for you in
from
blood.
The past!
Yeah, it's really cool effect, and it really gives it a very personal feel. I mean, I feel like this is Nintendo's very sly, surprising way of sort of reviving the art of letter writing. Even though you can't write a long letter on this, it is very much, if someone has poor handwriting, you will see it when they do this. And if someone has kind of a sloppy way, or they go back and they make a lot of corrections, or they kind of tweak their letters a lot to make them look just right, and they're really anal about it, you'll see that happen. So you really see the process of someone making this stuff. The other thing is, if you have friends who are really good artists and they like to draw all this great doodle art, you actually see the process of them doing it. You see how they do it, you know, how they do all the shading, how they make the outlines look just the way that they are. It's really, really cool. I mean, it's a simple idea, but I've never seen anyone do it like this before. And luckily, I have a lot of 3DS friends because, you know, I'm a member of the forums. And if you want more, that's the place to go. Lots of codes there. Send people PMs. You trade.
I won't troll you for under an hour.
And I think this is the killer app for the 3DS friends list. I mean, this makes it worthwhile typing in all those friend codes, because being able to communicate this way is so cool. And it's something you can't do on any other platform. And it's really, really, really fun to do. You can also attach 3D photos. You can use all these like stationary backgrounds. You can put sounds in there. I'm not completely sure how that works, but there's a lot of weird little features you unlock after you send a few notes. And it's just really cool. And like I said, with Animal Crossing, I think this is something that could be integrated into games. And I think this is something that could also probably be upgraded over time to add even more features. But as it is, knowing what it is and understanding now the appeal of it, I would have gladly paid for this. But I think Nintendo is very smart to give this away for free, because then people will actually use it.
I presume as well that in subsequent shipments of 3DSs, it'll be preloaded onto the system.
Yeah, oh yeah, because actually, so. It's not just in the eShop, because if you don't download it by Sunday, it was showing up on your list of menu items, and then you had to click it and took you straight to the eShop to download it. So it was already dropping it on your home screen.
Well, it's warranted in this case. This is a feature that everyone's 3DS should have, and everyone should use it because it's so cool. I mean, there's just so many great upgrades to the 3DS. I mean, someone recently said, is there any system that has been more improved since its launch in such a short period of time? I don't think there is. Now, part of that is because they had so far to come. I mean, the 3DS was terrible when they launched it.
I mean, you could toss the PS3 in that boat because, I mean, there was just ridiculous shit missing at launch.
Sure. But the PS3 has taken really a long time to sort of catch up and become sort of full-fledged. I think 3DS at this point is, I mean, in terms of architecture, in terms of all the interface and all the things that it does, and especially in terms of the shop, it's the best Nintendo system they've ever done. And it's been the most well-supported after launch. And I think not only have they fixed a lot of things that needed to be fixed, but they've added a lot of amazing stuff that they really didn't have to, like the second adventure in Find Me, and all the new 3D puzzle pieces that you get, Swapnote. It's like, this is really good stuff. I mean, really good, and it's unique to this system. It really hasn't been done anywhere else. And I think they're sort of making a very strong case that the 3DS can do things that you can't do on your smartphone, and that there's a reason to carry it around. And
well, yeah, so two things. One, the fact that you can do the 3D sketches, even though you can only do it in two layers, is pretty cool.
It's fantastic, yeah.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping you could do back, middle, and forward, but even just middle and forward is still pretty good.
Yeah.
Secondly, this isn't really a functionality of the game much, but I would like to say that not only is this one of the best tutorials Nintendo's ever done, the whole Nikki process where you get legitimately walked through how to do things.
And all the messages that she sends you to teach you how to use it are done in the interface of Swapnote. So you actually see her writing these notes that tell you how to make your own notes.
And they're really good too.
Oh, like, yeah. Yeah.
What I thought was funny is that this Nikki character, which is a me and never talks, just puts up notes essentially, might have the most personality of any Nintendo original character in a decade. I mean, the notes legitimately have, like,
well, she's more expressive because, you know, I mean, they generally don't do voice acting, but because she's writing these things and drawing these doodles, and you really get a sense of her personality through her, the way that she conveys this information to you.
It was a very creative approach for dealing with something that has to be dealt with when you make a game.
Yeah. Swapnote is everything I love about PictoChat, everything I love about Twitter.
But through the Nintendo Blender.
Yeah, and it's absolutely brilliant. I mean, it's amazing, and it's free. And you don't have to be online the whole time you use it. You can download notes over SpotPass when you're near Wi-Fi, and then later open it up, and it will, it will just show you all the ones that it downloaded while it was asleep, and then you can reply to a bunch of them or write your own, and it will just put those in the outbox, and then the next time that it connects to Wi-Fi, it will upload those to everybody.
And in fact, you can also send them through StreetPass as well, which is a nice touch.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like it'll be useful at PAX East.
Oh, brother. I can't wait.
You're going to get so many horrifying 3D drawings.
It's going to be amazing.
Well, actually, it's funny because one of the things she tells you to do is keep in mind what you send so you don't offend anyone or something like that.
Good luck.
We did have one. I don't know whether this went out to everyone. We did have one nice sketch from, I think, the person on the forums. His username would be Professor Clayton, which was of a very angry looking Yoshi brandishing a dagger, threatening to gouge the eyes out of Shy Guy in reference to the Mario Kart thing that I had a couple of weeks ago.
I wish you could forward that to me. I mean, there's a couple things like that that it's missing, and I hope that they'll add it
later.
Well,
some of it is you can't, there's an option to save messages that, you know, rather than just favorite them, you can actually save them, but only if the person that sent it allows you to. There's an option in there that's sort of tucked away that's like, will you allow what you send out to be saved? And the default is no. So I'm guessing, you know, it's you don't have stuff that can be used against you, you know, maybe a little off-color remark then these days gets used against you. So, I mean, if someone had a label, I could have saved that and then maybe even extracted it and used it for the chapter or something.
Well, Swapnote is ridiculously cool. I think it's one of the best things Nintendo has ever done.
Whoa, that's a bit
I'm serious. I think it's one of those magical things. You open it up. I had no idea what it was. I didn't know I was going to be getting it. I open it up and I see what it really does. And I'm like, holy shit. I can't believe that I'm doing this on my 3DS. It is a killer app. For me, this is a killer app for 3DS. Like, it is a reason for me to open up my 3DS more often. I'm always excited when I open it to see what came in, and I'm checking it. I'm using it more than just about anything else on the system right now. Even with all the Ambassador games and Pushmo and Mighty Switch Force and Mario Kart and all that stuff, Swapnote is the thing that I care about the most right now on my 3DS. I think it is incredibly good. Incredibly good. And PAX East is going to be baller with this thing. Amazing. So, moving on. I played today, very briefly, as much as anyone would need to play, I played Game Type. Have you guys heard of this at all?
Yes, I have heard of it.
Okay. It's a weird story. So, Game Type is the newest game from Mommy's Best Games. Our friend Nathan Fouts, makers of Weapon of Choice and Shoot One Up and Explosion Aid and Serious Sam.
Grapple Buggy, for crying out loud.
And the upcoming masterpiece Grapple Buggy. And it's clearly something that they threw together very quickly, for good reason. So when Microsoft launched the new Xbox interface a few weeks ago, they made the indie games even more difficult to find than they already were.
Yes, they made everything more difficult to find.
It's true. They made all the games, including even arcade games, are hard to find now.
They basically said, if you want to use your Xbox, you have to own a Kinect now. Because even getting to Netflix is a pain in the ass now.
Yeah, so when you finally get to the game marketplace and then flip to the game page, which makes no sense, the only way to get to indie games is there's a little box in the top right corner that says Game Type, and it has this ridiculous, like, stock artwork of some girl in a hoodie doing parkour against a wall with graffiti art. It's like, well, it makes no sense for it to be there. You click on that, and then it lets you choose arcade games, indie games, Xbox On Demand, and Xbox Original games. And it's way deep. It's like five menus deep in this interface. It's really badly placed. And it also, there's no visual indication that that's what you would click on in order to find indie games. So, obviously, they're not promoting indie games in any way, shape, or form. They made it very difficult to find them. So Nathan said, okay, well, what if I make a game based on that little icon and call it Game Type so that the dumbass interface Microsoft has concocted for their new Xbox firmware unwittingly promotes my new game on the indie game store. So he called it Game Type, and the game's artwork is based around this stupid character of the girl in the green hoodie. And it's amazingly funny. It costs $1. If you can actually find the game to buy it, Actually, the easiest way might be to go to the Xbox website and search for it there. It's probably faster than trying to get it through the system itself. But if you can actually find it, the first thing that happens is when you turn on the game, when you turn on game type, the game itself is a 2D horizontal shoot 'em up. It's very simple. It's very cheesy. It reminds me a little of Choaniki in that it's like a lot of random stupid sprites and a kind of a not really all that great shooter, but that's not really the point, you know? It's about looking at these ridiculous characters flying by and all the stupid sound effects and crap like that. But in order to even get to that, when you open up game type, it presents you with a fake sort of low-res ghetto-looking version of the new Xbox interface, except it's called the Media Ball. That's the fake console. And you have to navigate through the menus on there to even find the game in order to play it. So it has simulated menus in the game itself, and it trains you. In order to boot up the shooter, you actually have to go through essentially the same process to get to it as you would to find indie games in the real store. So there, it actually trains you to find indie games. And along
That's
the way,
awful.
All the stupid boxes and the places where there, all the advertisements are on the new Xbox interface, those are all either fake ads, which are really, really funny, or they're actual advertisements for other indie games that are on the store. And so there's one for Shoot One Up, but there's also stuff from like Radiant Games, and there's one for Escape Goat. These are all like real indie games that are on the store that are probably just, you know, these guys are friends with Nathan. So he's promoting their games in his game in the same places where the advertisements for like Toyota and Mission Impossible are, you know, in the real store. It's really meta. It's really goofy. And the whole thing, you'll probably mess with it for 10 minutes. I mean, it's basically you're paying $1 for a joke, but it's a really good joke.
And more importantly, it's a statement.
I'm almost shocked this game got released.
I know. I'm surprised Microsoft didn't sort of censor it because it's pretty scathing.
So the censoring in the Microsoft system is actually ex post facto for the most part. I mean, people flag it for review who are community developers, but if he's promoting the community developers' games in their game,
right,
they might not do it.
I don't think the community policing is going to catch this one, so it'll be interesting to see if Microsoft lets it stay up. But anyway, it's $1. I think it's worth it. It supports a great developer, and it made me laugh a lot. It really did.
It says, hey, so. Microsoft, what the F?
Yeah. It's ingenious. So much love for Nathan, and I really hope Grapple Buggy gets finished at some point. So the next game I will talk about is called Aquaria. I downloaded this as part of one of those Indie Royale bundles or something a few weeks ago. And this was actually one of the bonus games. I got it with Darwinia and a bunch of other stuff that I didn't even want. But I got it because it allowed me to get Aquaria for about half the price that they usually sell it for on Steam. And I've been wanting Aquaria for quite a while because I've heard a lot about it. It has been described as a sort of underwater Metroid game. And it's 2D, really nice artwork, very beautiful music, and seemingly very relaxing gameplay in the vein of like a Endless Ocean. You know, because it's underwater and the movement is fairly slow, there's a lot of inertia to steering yourself around. It seems like it would be fairly laid back, but it's essentially exploration-based, like Metroid. You know, it's this huge underwater world, and you're looking for things. You get upgrades, you get new powers, you transform into different shapes. So it's really cool. And I played about 8 or 9 hours of it now, so I'm fairly far into the game, probably about halfway through it. The surprising thing for me about Aquaria is that it is actually really difficult. Really, really surprisingly difficult. Maybe it's because I haven't been playing it with a real mouse. I've been playing it on my little touchpad on my netbook, which is not ideal, I'll admit. But also the game, it's just you get to a point where it throws a lot of enemies at you. They do a lot of damage, and your healing items are fairly hard to come by. You kind of have to get resourceful, and you have to keep an eye on where the closest save point is so you can always run back to it so you don't lose progress. And it gets hairy, and there are some bosses that are really pretty difficult. They're very much puzzle-based bosses. If you think of the What's the guy, the crocodile guy in Super Metroid?
Crocomire.
If you think about him, how you can't actually defeat him by just doing a lot of damage. You have to sort of solve a puzzle in order to beat him. These bosses are very much like that. You have to use some mechanic that the game has been teaching you over the course of that area and use that to defeat the boss. And it's really cool. I mean, the bosses are very cool, and they reward you very well when you defeat them. You get some really cool new powers and stuff, and they let you get to new areas of the game. And it's really good stuff. I think it's excellent. Apparently, there's also an iPad version that 8.4 worked on. I think they mainly did the Japanese translation, so if you play it in English, I'm not sure how much of a hand they had in it. But apparently and I can see how this would be very well suited to iPad. The controls are very simple. I think the touchscreen interface would work pretty well for it. And it's not Twitch-based. It is an action game at times, but it's not so twitchy that you'll really wish you had a controller. In fact, it doesn't even seem to support a controller. I got a wired Xbox controller for Christmas to use on PC games, and it doesn't seem to work on Aquaria. So I think you have to play it with some kind of mouse or touch interface. So if you have an iPad, you might as well play it on that. It's probably cheaper that way too. Maybe the best comparison, even more than Metroid, is Echo the Dolphin. Thankfully, it's not as difficult as Echo. You don't have to worry about about your air supply because you play a mermaid, but it's pretty challenging still, and the world that it gives you is really large, and sometimes just traveling from one place to another takes a pretty long time, but it's also very easy to get distracted and go off on some side way that you haven't explored before and find a little bonus item. So there's a lot of cool stuff like that. I think you probably know if you like this kind of a game, and if you do, I would recommend checking it out. And that sort of leads me to the fact that I got a new gaming PC. So this has been long overdue. I got a new desktop, bought it from a boutique maker called Velocity Micro.
Oh, hey.
Yeah, they're in Virginia.
Yeah, they're across town.
I'm very impressed with it so far. It comes in this huge, very spacious aluminum case that's very cool to the touch. And it looks really nice. It runs quietly. It's very, very powerful under the hood. And it cost not much more than if I had built the thing myself out of the same components. And they do all the assembly and the wiring by hand. So, and it's all, you know, warrantied and everything. And I have tech support. So I think it's worth paying a little bit more and not having to worry about building it myself. So I'm pretty happy with it so far, and it has a pretty damn good graphics card, so I'm going to be playing a lot more PC games in the next few months. Some of it I'd already bought in anticipation of this and just had not been able to actually play on my old computer. So I bought a pack of The Witcher and The Witcher 2 because they were on sale for $25 as a bundle on Good Old Games. And Witcher 2 is supposed to be amazing. The first one's supposed to be really good too. So I should have no problems running those on this new machine. I'm finally going to check out Civ 5, which I've owned for about 6 months and have not played at all. Going to finish KOTOR. There's a lot of stuff that I want to do. One of the games I've been playing on is Bastion, which is awesome. Awesome. And I've got the Xbox controller, which works really well for it. I'll talk more about Bastion next week, along with Gears 3, which I'm almost finished with on 360. So I'll talk about those next week, but just wanted to make note, I got a new PC. I'm very, very happy about it. All right, well, that kind of wraps up my new business. And before we go, we did want to address one listener mail that we didn't have time to last week when Billy and TYP were on the show. So, Greg, could you read this letter, please?
Yes, so Hanabishi writes, I wanted to pitch in on the recent news about Miyamoto saying he thinks Retro and Zelda would be a good collaboration. Though I think Retro are a very talented company and one of my favourite Nintendo developers, my immediate reaction to the news was, no way. EAD are obviously very protective of Zelda, and while I think Retro's sense of art and level design would be a great fit for a Zelda game, given the proper guidance of course, I assume that were this collaboration ever to actually happen, it would be one where EAD would design the actual game and outsource the art or other aspects of legwork to Retro in order to cut down on development time. To me, it sometimes feels like, despite their talent, Retro are always dragged along kicking and screaming by Nintendo. Metroid Prime was obviously Nintendo taking a chance on them. Then they went on to develop two more Prime games, and it seems like Retro may not necessarily have wanted to do that. Even with regard to the Prime titles themselves, Nintendo have stepped in on many occasions to block or counter some of Retro's own creative ideas. And that's a reference to the whole Metroid Prime 1.5 stuff that kind of leaked quite a long time ago now. Then there's also the matter of the constant senior staff resignations that people left after DKC Returns as well as after Prime 3. It does make you wonder if Nintendo don't really trust Retro beyond a certain extent, perhaps partly due to cultural differences. Somehow, I just don't see them entrusting this team with Zelda, unless they keep them on a very, very tight leash or just use them as an outsourced studio like in the case of Mario Kart 7. On the flip side, something else to consider is that with Wii U coming out, Retro are quite possibly the most valuable asset Nintendo have, given their technical expertise. They're also the only real Western developer that Nintendo owns, and Zelda on consoles is definitely going to be catering more to the West in the future, given Skyward Sword sales in Japan.
Well, I mean, the only outsourcing that's happened with the series has been to Flagship with Capcom, right?
Right.
But that is a significant history. I mean, they're...
Yeah, they ended up getting insourced.
Yeah, but in the end, they bought these people out. So, I mean,
the studio was dissolved, ultimately, but certain key people have ended up working, you know, on Phantom Hourglass and the Spirit Tracks.
Well, yeah, I mean, like we said, one of the Flagship guys was the director of Skyward Sword.
Yeah, of course, Flagship was a Japanese company, but I think the end of Hanabishi's email is maybe the most important part, because you think about the reason Nintendo allowed Retro to work on Metroid back in the late 90s or early 2000s is that they saw it as being having primarily Western appeal, and they said, why don't we let our new Western studio work on it? Because we don't necessarily want to devote our Japanese resources to a game that won't sell in Japan. I think that was very much part of the thinking. I think now, with the way the popularity of Zelda has gone, where it's really shifted to the Western markets, and it's not as popular in Japan anymore, even though they've severely tried with, you know, Phantom Hourglass and Spirit Tracks and other things.
Well, Phantom Hourglass did fine.
I mean, but that's an interesting point, because Phantom Hourglass did seem to create a step change in sales. So, to, you know, they were certainly much more successful than certain recent console installments, or even, you know, significantly more so than the Minish Cap, which is on GBA. But obviously, first of all, the DS is very incredible success in Japan, is a part of that. And then the other thing that's interesting to note is just how much more poorly Spirit Tracks did after it.
Yep.
That was on very significant discounts very shortly after. I remember James Charlton talking about this. He was seeing it for really ridiculously low prices very soon after its launch.
It was in the bin.
Yeah, so, you know, it seems like if that effect was, you know, really significant in any way, it may also have been transitory. And then with Skyward Sword, you're not really doing all that well. Perhaps they've done all they can in Japan with the series.
Yeah, I think, you know, Nintendo's way of thinking is that, well, if Europeans and Americans are the only ones who are going to really buy this, then let's let them make it rather than spend 4 to 5 years of our own internal, very precious Japanese resources to do it. The other thing is, I don't think that giving the next game or any Zelda game to Retro Studios would be letting it out of control, and I don't think it's really true that they let Metroid Prime or Donkey Kong Returns be developed sort of in an unleashed way. I think Nintendo going back to Metroid Prime and even before Metroid Prime, they've been very hands-on with Retro Studios. Those games are produced in America as well as in Japan. They have producers on both sides. They have daily teleconferences, sometimes hours and hours and hours long. They have constant trips back and forth. It's a very collaborative process, and maybe collaborative isn't even the word, because I think Nintendo very much drives it. I think they have final say on everything, and I think they...
Well, that is even raised and exemplified in the letter itself, when this Hanabishi talks about some of the things where they basically, you know, overruled Retro about ideas for Metroid Prime 2, you know, and then Metroid Prime 2 becomes something quite different from what Retro had originally sort of suggested.
Yeah, so I think it's what I'm getting to is I think this is completely within the realm of possibility. And I think it would not even be that radical of a thing for Nintendo to do. It might scare some of the fans, but I think realistically, if you look at all the things that we just talked about, it kind of makes sense. and I think it could be really good for the franchise.
But see, here's where I would say the argument doesn't really make sense, because the fundamental reason for doing this would be for freeing up development resources in Japan, but there's a team that all they know is Zelda. I mean, that's their specialty. Wouldn't you want to leverage that as the primary development resource? I mean, you could say we're not taking up our valuable Japanese resources, but they're taking up your valuable retro resources. I mean,
yeah, I mean, I think what one of the points that it would raise is, okay, if we made this switch, would we then like pare down the Zelda team in Japan to just a group that would essentially attach itself to retro by remote? But then, okay, so we freed up those other people. You have to kind of have a compelling use for them. You know, as long as you can actually then say, well, and what by doing this, what it allows us to do is take all these other people that would have just been working on Zelda and give them really big value projects to work on, games that we think are going to do very well for us, that they can actually produce better than anyone else in the company, where their, you know, comparative advantage in Nintendo's roster of developers lies.
Right.
Then,
I mean,
then it would make sense.
Yeah. I mean, you don't just make a change like this to make a change. I mean, That's certainly not Nintendo's way of doing things.
Well, rather than look at the economics of whether they should do it, let's look at some of the creative possibilities here. I know, John, you're a big fan of Retro Studios. What aspects of what they do you think they could bring to Zelda?
If you say graphics, I'm ending the call.
Well, I think they're really good world builders. I think they could kind of break the series out of that mold and kind of bring a different flair. I'm not too sure exactly where they might take it. They might be able to take it possibly in a more realistic direction if Nintendo is looking at that as something to appeal to a Western audience.
Uh-oh, we're hovering over the disconnect button. It's getting there.
I don't want it to be more realistic, but how about, Skyward Sword has some very mild sci-fi elements. Obviously, Zelda would never go to the extent of Metroid in terms of sci-fi, but I think there is a sci-fi kind of mentality that you could integrate with the Zelda design motif. And I think Retro is very much capable of doing that. If you look at Metroid Prime, there are elements of fantasy as well as sci-fi. And they work really nicely together.
But also, it seems that that would very likely be outside their remit. Mm-hmm. Because they've never been given that latitude on things that apparently Nintendo is not so attached to. So I don't think that they would get that now.
Right, and to be honest, there's a whole generation of not just developers, but of creative people, directors, writers, who essentially that's all they've ever done is Zelda. There's no way Nintendo says, all right, you guys aren't working on this. Ultimately, that same core of four or five people is probably still going to run this project in the same way they ran the other ones.
But what if Aonuma and the Zelda Illuminati team that he has, what if they had a concept for a Zelda game that went in a direction that they felt Retro was better equipped to implement? So it's not that they'd be giving Retro the reins to go crazy with Zelda, but they would have an idea, let's say a Majora's Mask kind of project that is really off-kilter and weird and at a skewed angle from the general thrust that the series has been taking. And they said, this is kind of what we have in mind, but we don't know that we really have the artists, the writers, the designers in-house. We think they're too steeped in the heritage of Zelda and the old way of doing it. So we would like you guys to help us execute this idea and bring your skills to it because we think it matches better with your talents. I think that's possible.
Yeah.
I really do.
Sure, as a hypothetical, that's possible. But, I mean, I don't see that Nintendo's going to go, yeah, we want to rethink all this. It just doesn't strike me as the move they're going to make, because they're super conservative with this franchise in particular.
Majora's Mask is conservative?
Well, from a gameplay standpoint, yeah, it is. I mean,
I think they actually did. I mean, the way savings handled alienated a lot of people and contributed it to selling less. That was not that conservative.
No, but I mean, it wasn't like some grand revisioning of how they're going to do things.
And I mean, with Phantom Hourglass, it's not the fact that they went with such a different control scheme, I think, was not the most straightforward thing they could have done. And that actually did pay off more in the sales to some extent, but it doesn't necessarily suggest that they've got like a lasting growth of the fan base to show for it. Mm-hmm. And of course they can still go with different approaches for a console game versus what will be the next original Zelda on 3DS. I mean, clearly there's going to be one on 3DS, and obviously the guys at the current Zelda team are very well versed in portable gaming, so they could achieve things on 3DS, while Retro are also bringing to market a Zelda game for Wii U that won't be as far down the line in its life cycle.
See, I don't feel like they're going to hand over the reins of the console Zelda ever. I mean, that's
But, I mean, if you were looking at this through a Japan-centric lens, the fact of the matter is that portable gaming is where it's at now. So, I mean, you know, if you're talking about the sort of Japan preoccupation with status and whatnot, you know, prestige, perhaps the handheld, the 3DS Zelda is the prestigious one now.
It's not. I mean, I think for that franchise in particular, you would never catch Nintendo saying that.
But, James, they handed over the reins to Mario, to their new Tokyo studio.
Yeah, but that's still internal, and it's still manageable because
it's Retro Studios is internal.
It's quite a bit different because the EAD people weren't just people they hired off the street. It was people who were experienced from already inside EAD.
They'd worked on Sunshine and stuff.
It was a spin-off team. I mean,
yeah, sure. It's obviously, with Hanabishi talks about cultural differences. I mean, there's always that, and that will inevitably play into it in some way. But I do. The fact of the matter is, if they want to have, you know, at the moment, you know, you look at some of the things they're achieving with 3DS software sales, or even the hardware sales in Japan. Yeah, you know, my favorite stat is that it's already outsold the GameCube in Japan.
What? Really?
It sold over 4 million now this year, with a humongous week to finish off the year.
It was insane.
Yeah, it's selling nicely now that Monster Hunter's out, for sure.
Yeah, if Monster Hunter, Mario Kart, Mario 3D Land, that trinity of games. Is
that
just
trinity of sales. It just
set it on fire, and it's outsold the GameCube. Think of all those great games that were on the GameCube, that system, you know, that we celebrated its 10th birthday a bit ago. You know, with all the troubled launch and all that shit, it's already outsold it in Japan. I mean, it's amazing. And 3D Land has already outsold Galaxy 2, is going to outsell Galaxy. I mean, portable gaming is where it is at in Japan. If they can kind of have their cake and eat it here, they can maybe, if they still believe that there's a chance that they can, you know, ignite Zelda, reignite it, whatever, in Japan, perhaps they can approach that with their original 3DS game. Mm. And then, if they also want to bring an original Wii Zelda to market sometime in the next 3 years instead of the next five, Retro could be the team to shepherd it to market while the other guys do the handheld game. I mean, to me, that makes plenty of sense. It doesn't mean, you know, it has to happen by any means. They could achieve the same ends by any number of different configuration of developers, but that makes sense.
I think it's a plausible scenario.
Well, also, that doing it on 3DS would make sense as well.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if Retro works on 3DS. Beyond, I mean, obviously they did some work on Mario Kart, but that wasn't their project. I think they really were helping that game make its release date.
Yeah, they would spare capacity at the time, and they got picked up.
That was a, we need games now.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a little hard for me to wrap my mind around this whole issue or question with Skyward Sword so fresh in my mind and having really no idea what Retro's doing right now. I mean, I think they certainly did not spend their entire studio on doing Mario Kart 7 tracks. So I feel like they must have something in the cooker that they've been doing since Donkey Kong, and I hope that we see it in a few months. I really, really hope so, because they're one of my favorite developers, and for me, Donkey Kong didn't really have the personality and the flair that I liked in the Metroid Prime games, and I'd like to see them. I'm not saying I don't want them to work on yet another Nintendo franchise, and I'm not saying I want them to go back to Metroid, but I'd like to see them do any project in which I felt like they were working less off an established template. Because DKCR is so much like the old Donkey Kong Country games. It's better in many ways, don't get me wrong, but it is very much based on that template. And Metroid Prime was so just blisteringly original when it came out. It did so many innovative things and did them so well. And I would really like to see them sort of do something like that again, regardless of what character you slap on it or whatever.
Mm.
You know, I think the other thing I wanted to mention is that, you know, now that Onuma and Miyamoto are saying, you know, we think all future Zelda games should have motion control and do some of this crazy motion plus stuff that they did in Skyward Sword. If you look back at Metroid Prime 3, Retro was doing some really interesting stuff with motion control in that game as well. So I think potentially that, you know, even as far as puzzle solving. So I think there's maybe some overlap there as well. I think they can maybe get a handle on that kind of stuff and carry forward with that aspect of the Zelda franchise as well.
Oh yeah, it's not out of their wheelhouse by any means. I mean, we've noted in previous episodes the similarities between Metroid Prime and Zelda, how, you know, the Prime game certainly took Metroid a lot closer to Zelda than yes. they were before. You know, you've got a certain amount of crossover there. But the other thing I would like to say is just that Nintendo's ability to effectively oversee other developers is very well proven in a variety of projects. And certainly, you know, with teams that are far more external than Retro, you see them get very good results out of outfits like, you know, Next Level Games that are not seen when they make games without Nintendo's oversight. So,
right.
You know, I think if Nintendo made the decision to say, we think this can work, and, you know, we'll have our core Zelda sort of overseers work with Retro, I think they could totally pull it off.
Yeah.
If they were inclined to do it, I think they could make it work. But the question really is kind of James has raised it, is would there be the inclination? And if Miyamoto's kind of mooting it, then I'd say that inclination has not been ruled out.
Yeah. Good point. Okay, well, that's going to wrap up the show, guys. Before we go, wanted to announce the new retroactive nominees. This will be retroactive number 21. And if you're new to the show, the idea of retroactive is that you vote on a game that we will all play together, including you, the listener, as well. And then we will have a forum thread, and all the people playing at home will contribute their thoughts on the game and have a discussion there. We will play it and have a discussion on the podcast, and then we will read comments from the forums as well and interact with you that way. So it's a really fun way to get everybody on board, all playing the same game at the same time. And we try to go with games that maybe people haven't played enough of, or games that we overlooked, or games that we just think would bring up a really interesting discussion. We talked a lot about which way to go with this set of games, and there were a lot of interesting ideas, some of which I'm sure will resurface in a future edition of the feature. But for Retroactive 21, we're going to go with a GBA Ambassador theme. So these are games that many of you already have all three of, either on cartridge or on your 3DS if you are an ambassador. So you will be able to pick from the following games: Wario Land 4, Fire Emblem, The Sacred Stones, and Kirby and the Amazing Mirror. I think they're all ripe for interesting discussion, and they'll all be new to at least one of us, I think, and hopefully to you as well. So the poll for this will be at NintendoWorldReport.com. If you go to the show notes for this episode, you will find a link there, or just go to the forums and head over to the podcast discussion section of the forums. If you're not registered for the forums, do that and vote in the poll. It'll take only a minute, and we would really like to get complete participation from every listener. We want your votes because it helps make the best possible decision. I think this will be a close one. I don't think there's any real clear winner here. That's the way we like it. So we want to be very competitive, and in order to do that, we need a lot of people to vote and make your voices heard. And then whatever wins, we would really appreciate if you actually played the game and discuss it in the forum. I think a very, very large portion of our listenership has these games or can get them very easily. They're all old and fairly easy to acquire. So I hope you'll participate. Let us know which one of these games you'd like us to play and which one you'd like to play with us. We'll have a couple weeks of voting and then announce the winner. And then shortly after that, we will begin the discussion. So that's it, folks. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
I've missed three shows now, so it's good to be back. In that time, I've done some traveling. I didn't really have a lot of time to play on the road. Actually, I didn't really do any portable gaming at all. Usually when I fly, I play PSP or play the DS, but I really didn't touch them much at all. I actually did a lot of reading. So,
oh, nice.
Go reading. Go
what were you reading?
Porn.
I'm reading I'm nerding out completely. I'm reading some of the Warcraft novels.
old school stuff.
Pull the ejector seat, ladies and gentlemen.
Wow, literally.
I hope those are fulfilling.
Yeah, they're good. I mean, nobody on this podcast would even care, and nobody in our audience would care, and I realize that. But you know what? Fuck you all.
I asked, and...
You asked, I told. So, there you have it.
I honestly think... I'm not going to spoil the ending of the game, but I honestly think there will not be an Uncharted 4. I think the Vita game is probably some kind of prequel or, you know, interquel between 1 and 2 or between 2 and 3, and I think... They'll all be spin-offs in the future, because there's definitely a sense throughout Uncharted 3 of I'm getting too old for this shit. And they really discuss it explicitly among themselves. The characters discuss with each other that we should really probably quit this. Like, this is too dangerous. It's not worth it. It doesn't make sense to do this over and over and over again.
I'm pretty sure Danny Glover said that quite a few times before Lethal Weapon 4.
He did.
Well, he was under contract.